Okay, we're going to continue with Pirkei Avos, despite what it says in the Torah tidbits. We ended with a question which we gave one answer to, and today I want to give another answer. We're discussing the Mishnah, the third Mishnah in the first chapter of Pirkei Avos. Antigonus Isocho said that Altiyu Kavodim Hameshamshim Esarab Amenasa Kabel Pras. Don't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a slave who serves his master in order to receive reward. It's a simple meaning. And we asked from the Abarbanel a few questions. Amongst them, that the Torah promises reward for mitzvahs. There are sources that a person can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu for reward. So why does Antigonus Isocho say not? And people need an incentive to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Excuse me, why does he have a reason?
Antigonus? Good question. Throughout our history, except for in Mitzrayim, Jews have had, for various reasons, non-Jewish names in the places where they lived in Golis. For various reasons. Some for good reasons. For instance, the name Alexander was given as a remembrance of a nace that happened with Alexander the Great. And in his honor, they named their children Alexander. Other names, Moshe Feinstein says the following. He says, it is not a very positive thing to use non-Jewish names. Better to use Hebrew names. Where there are reasons why it's necessary, then it's necessary. And here by Antigonus Isocho, there may have been reasons. I'm not sure of the reasons. But he says it's not as serious as what it says by Mitzrayim. By Mitzrayim, it says that one of the merits that we had to go out of Egypt was we didn't change our names. We had Jewish names. So if that's the case, then having an English name, French name, a Greek name would be something very negative. Says Moshe Feinstein, that was only before the Torah was given. Then a Jew could be identified by his name, by his clothing, right, by his language. But after the Torah was given, a Jew is identified by his adherence to the Torah. That sets him aside. So the language he speaks and the dress that he wears and the name that he has isn't that significant anymore, because there's a lot more significant things that separate a Jew from a goy than was before the Torah was given. That's what he says. But it's true. He also says that even though customarily in Kemat every country, Jews adopted non-Jewish names, right? In America, even Rabbonim had English names. Right? They were called by their English name. It wasn't so much because they wanted to assimilate, but it's because the non-Jews couldn't pronounce the Hebrew names, and it was detrimental for business purposes or whatever to be called a Hebrew name that nobody could pronounce. Today, that's not the case. Today in America, there are plenty of people walking around with African names that are much harder to pronounce than Jewish names. And nobody bats an eyelash. So today, there's no reason why you shouldn't name your child a Hebrew name in America. Because it's not a melting pot anymore, and all these foreign people there have very, very weird names, and somebody's called Yaakov is not going to be any weirder than somebody being called, Karum or something like that. So, but it was like everywhere. In Germany, they used to have a special ceremony to give the secular name. I forgot what it was called. It was called Holzkraft or something like that, where they had a special ceremony where they gave a secular name, and they gave a Jewish name by the Bris or by Kriyas HaTorah for a girl. So why, in the time of Chazal, why the Tanoim had, and he wasn't the only one, Antigonus, many Tanoim had names that were not necessarily Jewish, and even though there are some people who want to say that many of these names were like nicknames that were aberrations of Hebrew names, that's stretching it very far by some of them. And Antigonus is one of them that's almost impossible to say that it is a nickname that is based on some Hebrew name. It is a Greek name, no shaila. But they say, like a name like Sumchos or something, there's convoluted ways of saying that they are really nicknames of Hebrew names, endearing kind of names, but it's probably not the case. Okay. So basically, after all of that, I'm not 100% sure. But what I told you from Moshe Feinstein, it's not as serious as what Chazal say was before the Torah was given. Okay, why it was like that? There were probably very good social reasons why they had to have names like that. Okay. Okay. So we said the Rambam, the Abarbanel, brings down the Rambam first, and that's what we were in the middle of discussing. The Rambam says that ideally, one should not serve the Ribbono Shel Olam even for the reward for the world to come. That is not the ideal. If you need it, it is the lesser of two evils not to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, or to serve him for an ulterior motive. But that's not the highest level. And even, okay, we'll see that the Abarbanel argues on that, but even to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with the hope or with the for the purpose of getting the world to come, spiritual reward, even that's not the ideal. And the Rambam also explains, and we're going to discuss both of these points today, the Rambam also explains that which the Torah promises reward in this world, not only not the next world, this world, is not because that is the incentive to do the mitzvahs, nor is that reward. That is a perk, that if you will keep the mitzvahs properly, and we'll see that there is another condition that has to do with this coming week's Sedra, so we'll mention it, then God will give you conditions that are optimum to keeping the Torah. They're not reward. They are the benefits of keeping the mitzvahs. In this world, you will be given circumstances that will make it conducive to keep more mitzvahs. So when the Torah says that you'll have good crops and you'll have peace and you'll have rains in their proper time, it's not a reward. That is just that then the circumstances will be conducive that you'll be able to keep more mitzvahs. And the Rambam says that is why we look forward to Mashiach's time. Mashiach's time will be the era where the conditions in the world will be so optimum. There won't be any wars and there won't be any sickness and people live a long time and the world will be filled with all of the luxuries that people won't need to run after luxuries. They'll be commonplace. And people will run to learn Torah, to know more about God. That's what will interest them. Mol ha'aretz deyas Hashem. The world will be filled with knowledge of God, like the waters cover the sea. And the Tozer Rosh Yeshiva explained, there's a lot of things in the sea. There's seaweed and there's fish and there's all kinds of rocks and But when you look at the sea, what do you see? Water. Same thing. When you look at the world, there's going to be a lot of things in the world. But when you look at the world, you'll see one thing. Das es Hashem, knowledge of God. That's what the world is going to be all about. Even though there are going to be a lot of other things in the world, but the major thing will be Das es Hashem. And the Rambam, so therefore that is what we're looking forward to, the ideal time to be able to keep the mitzvahs, all of the mitzvahs. We'll have a Beis HaMikdash, we'll be in Eretz Yisrael, all the mitzvahs will apply again, we'll be able to keep all of them, and in the most conducive circumstances. And then the Rambam adds one more sentence, in order that we should be able to merit the greatest share in the world to come. So we asked on that, that means that the Rambam is saying that when we're looking forward for Mashiach, we're looking forward for the ideal time in order that we should be able to have the greatest share in the world to come. But the Rambam said that's not a reason to serve God in order to get the world to come. That is not the ideal. That's only if you need it. That's less than the ideal. So it comes out that every time we're looking forward to Mashiach coming, we're looking forward to something less than the ideal because we're doing it in order to get the greatest share in the world to come. So those two things seem to be contradictory. So last week, we already gave one answer, and we said there's a very big difference between serving God because I want a share in the world to come. I want that pleasure of the world to come. That's not the ideal. But if I'm serving God because God wants me, He wants to give me the pleasure of the world to come, and I want God to be able to fulfill His will. His will is that I should have pleasure. So I'm doing it not because I want the pleasure, but because I want God to be able to fulfill His will and give me pleasure. We gave example, Shabbos. There's a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos. Right? Onig Shabbos. So I can eat cholent because I love to eat cholent, and it's a good excuse. It's Shabbos, so there's a mitzvah to enjoy. So I eat cholent because I enjoy cholent. Or I'm eating the cholent because the mitzvah to enjoy the Shabbos, and one of the ways of doing that is by eating cholent. I'm doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah of enjoying the Shabbos. Not because I enjoy the cholent. I do. But I'm doing it not for my personal enjoyment. I'm doing it in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. Not because I enjoy the cholent, but it's only a means to reach an end of enjoying the Shabbos and fulfilling that mitzvah. So the second way is still the ideal. I'm not doing it for the sake of the pleasure or for the sake of the reward. The pleasure and the reward are to fulfill God's will, because He wants me to have that pleasure. He wants me to have that reward. But if I'm doing it because I want the reward, I want the pleasure, that's less than the ideal. That was one answer that we gave in the Rambam last week. Today I want to go back to the first part of that Rambam, because it really has to do with this coming week's Sedra, so we can kill two birds with one stone and speak about the Sedra a little bit too. The Rambam says that reward in this world is not reward. Reward for mitzvahs is only in the next world. So what does the Torah promise? All these physical, material things, rains in their time and bountiful crops or whatever, that's not reward. That is that if you'll keep the mitzvahs, God says that I will give you conditions where you'll be able to keep more mitzvahs. Schar mitzvah, mitzvah. One of the ways of understanding it, the reward for a mitzvah in this world is the ability to do another mitzvah. If you do mitzvahs, God will give you the opportunity to do more mitzvahs. But the reward for mitzvahs is in the next world. That's what the Rambam says. But the Rambam gives a condition, not just if you'll keep the mitzvah, and not only if you'll keep it properly, but if you will keep it b'simcha uv'tuv levav, if you'll keep it with happiness and a good heart. If you'll do the mitzvahs with happiness and a good heart, then there will be a result in this world that God will give you conditions that will enable you to do more mitzvahs. But if you keep the mitzvahs, even properly, but not b'simcha uv'tuv leivav, it seems from the Rambam, that extra added perk won't exist. You won't necessarily be given circumstances that will be conducive to keep mitzvahs. Now, why? Why is that a condition? Now, that is based on a sentence in this week's Sedra. Why do we go into galus? And galus is definitely not conditions that are conducive to keep mitzvahs, right? Because the opposite of galus is Yemos HaMashiach. And that is the ideal situation, the ideal circumstances to keep mitzvahs. So the antithesis of Yemos HaMashiach is galus. So why do we go into galus? Tachas asher lo avadeto es Hashem elokecha b'simcha uv'tuv leivav. Same words that the Rambam quotes. Because you didn't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'simcha, with joy and with a good heart. And that's why you're going to go into galus and serve your enemies. So what's this condition? Right? And there's also another problem. In another place, in Parshas Bechukosai, where the Torah also speaks about going into galus, it says another condition. You know why we go into galus? Not because we don't serve God with joy and with a good heart. Because we don't serve God with amol v'yegia. In Bechukosai teilechu, sheyiyu amelim batorah. Torah demands not simcha and a good heart. It demands a tremendous amount of effort and toil. Toil and effort. If you don't serve God with toil and effort, then you're going to go into galus. Now those two things on the surface seem to be contradictory. Serving God with joy and a good heart do not seem to go together with serving God with toil and effort. So how come the Torah says two contradictory things as why we go into galus? And why does the Rambam say that in order to get the reward in this world, meaning not the reward, but circumstances that are conducive to keeping the Torah in this world, you have to serve God with joy and a good heart? Why is that a condition? I think the answer is very simple. And that is the following. Based on the following Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which someday we'll get to, it's in the end of Pirkei Avos. So that someday is probably going to be a long time in the future, since we've been learning this for how many months already, and we got to the third Mishnah in the first chapter. But this Mishnah is in the sixth chapter. The Mishnah says like this, Kachi Darka Shel Torah. Do you want to know if you are on the path of Torah or not? Pas b'melech tochav. First consideration, only eat bread and salt. Melech b'mesura tishte. Don't drink anything but water and not too much of it. Only measured out water. V'al ha'aretz tisha. Do not sleep in a bed. Sleep on the floor. V'chayitzar tichya. Live a life of suffering and privation. Uvetorah ata'omel, and if you continue to occupy yourself with Torah, then ashrecha v'tov. Imata osakein, if you do that, ashrecha v'tov lach. Then you're fortunate and it'll be good for you. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, you'll be fortunate in this world, and tov lach b'olam haba, it'll be good for you in the next world. Just thought of something to add to this that I never thought of before. Well, I'm saying it. Okay. I'll tell you in a second what it is. This mission is very difficult. Very difficult. Because that means that anybody who eats more than bread and salt and drinks something other than water and sleeps in a bed is not Bederech HaTorah. So how many people do you know who are Bederech HaTorah, including yourself? I don't know anybody. I admit, I eat more than bread and salt. I sleep in a bed, right? I drink other things than water, okay? So that's it. I'm completely not Bederech HaTorah, okay? Some people may not drink soda. They only drink water. At least they're partially Bederech HaTorah. In fact, of all the people that I knew who were Gedolei Yisrael, I don't know exactly what they ate or didn't eat, but I know they slept in beds. So I didn't know anybody who was ever Bederech HaTorah, except I had an old Aunt Lena who had back trouble. She used to sleep on the floor. I remember that when I was a kid. Right.
But I don't think she ate bread and salt.
I don't know what she ate, but she was the only person who could have been Bederech HaTorah. At least she had a chance. So, what does it mean? And if you live a life like that, I understand that it's good for you in the next world. But Ashrecha Bolam Azeh, it's good for you in this world? What does that mean? Therefore, what I think the Mishnah means, and I think there are others who say it, pretty open. What the Mishnah means is the following. You could eat steak and drink soda, champagne, sleep on a Sealy mattress. But what would be if you didn't have those comforts, but you were still able to learn Torah and observe the Torah? How would you feel? If you would still feel fortunate and that it's good for you, because you understand that that's the main thing of this world. Why are you put into this world for? Why do we come into this world? To sleep on a Sealy mattress? To drink Coca-Cola? That's why we're in this world? No. We're in this world to be able to earn a share in the world to come. To be able to occupy ourselves in Torah and mitzvahs. Or even non-Jews. To be able to act in a way that is God-like, fulfill their seven mitzvahs, get a share in the world to come. Not only for Jews. Jews have a different kind of share in the world to come. But even non-Jews, the whole human being, all human beings, that's what we're here for. While we're here already, the Ribbono Shel Olam makes conditions many times very nice for us in order that we should be able to do what we're doing in a comfortable way. But that's not the purpose of existence. Therefore, if you don't have the champagne, don't have the Sealy mattress, sleeping on the floor, drinking only water, eating only bread, but you're able to do what you were put in this world to do, to observe Torah and learn Torah, how would you feel? If you still would feel Ashrecha v'tov lach, you would still feel fortunate and good, then Ashrecha ba'olam hazeh v'tov lach olam haba. Then taki, you're on the path of Torah. But if if you were missing those things, you'd feel miserable. That means that those are the main things in your life. Those are the things that make you happy. Not Torah. Those are the things that make you feel fortunate. That means that those are the main things of your life. That's why you're here. Then you're not the Derech HaTorah. You're not on the path of Torah. What did I just think of while I was saying this Mishnah? The following. So I'm going to tell you, that's why the Rambam says that you're only going to get those good things if you serve God the simcha of a tuv levav, meaning if you show the Ribbono Shel Olam that the main simcha in your life, that which makes you feel good and fortunate, is Torah and mitzvahs, then giving you all these creature comforts is not going to be negative, just the opposite. It's going to enhance your Torah life because you're going to use all those things to be able to serve God better. Because those things inhibit your ability to serve God and conflict with it, you're not going to give them up because that's not the main thing in your life. The main thing in your life is Torah and mitzvahs. You understand that's what you're here for. That's what your major occupation in life is. You're the Derech HaTorah. You're on a path leading from point A to point B. That's what you have to get. And anything that's going to deflect you from that path, you're not interested in. You want to get to your destination. You're the Derech HaTorah. So if those creature comforts are going to deflect you from the path, you're not going to use them. So they're not going to be detrimental. They can only be positive. God will send your way all the positive things in this world, because they will be conducive for you to keep more mitzvahs. But what happens if you don't serve God b'simcha v'tuv levav? You're not happy about it. You do it because you have to do it. But you know what gives you simcha and tuv levav? The good state, the nice bed. That's what makes you happy. So then if God sends you steaks and nice beds, there's a danger that if it comes in conflict with Torah, you'll choose that. Because that's what's the ikkar in your life. And it's very possible that those creature comforts sometimes conflict with Torah. Right? Give me an example. But sometimes if you have that good bed, you get a good night and good day sleep too. Right? And you just decide to stay in bed all day. Right? I mean, it's possible. Let me give you a more realistic example. A person has a choice. He has a job that he can take, which is going to give him a tremendous amount of money, and he'll be able to have all these nice things in this world. Have a beautiful house, and all the latest gadgets, right, and comforts, and a lot of food. But the job is in a city where there is no education for his children, right? The schools there are, at best, meager. There's no good shuls. There's very few. There's no yeshivas. There's no environment, no Torah environment. He's going to be in a totally non-Torah environment. He has another job he can take, a quarter of the salary. He'll just eke out a living. Not going to have that beautiful house. Not going to have all those gadgets. Not going to have a lot of food to eat. He's just going to be able to exist. Okay. Subsist. He'll make it. If the main thing in your life is Torah and mitzvahs, you'll take the second job. If the main thing in your life is living it up in this world, you'll take the first job. So if God sends you a job where it has all of those things, and he knows that the main thing in your life is not Torah and mitzvahs, he's not going to send you that first job, because it's going to be detrimental to you. It's not going to be conducive for you to keep more mitzvahs. It's going to be conducive for you to not keep mitzvahs. So he'll send you the second job, which is better for you, because in your circumstance, based on your outlook, the second job is better for you eternally. The first job is maybe better for you temporarily, but God knows that what's better for you eternally is better for you and not what's better temporarily. On the other hand, if you're the kind of person that will make the best of all the creature comforts or whatever, then God's not afraid to send you those things because you'll use them properly. And where you can't use them properly, you'll reject them. You won't take that first job. So therefore, says the Rambam, since the reward in this world is not reward, it's that God will reward you in this world by giving you circumstances that will make it conducive for you to keep more mitzvahs, that's only when are those circumstances successful material things, when you keep the Torah, the simcha, the tuv leva, when the Torah is your simcha in life. But if the Torah is not your simcha in life, then what God sends you, material good, may not be conducive to keep mitzvahs. It may deflect you from keeping mitzvahs. Therefore, there's no guarantee you can get those things. You'll only get it on condition that you recognize that Torah is your simcha. That's what it says. Imata osakein, if you live a life like that and you still consider yourself ashrecha v'tov lach, then ashrecha ba'olam hazeh, then I will give you those things in this world that will make you feel fortunate. Meaning I'll give you creature comforts in this world. Because for you, they won't be negative. Because even if you didn't have them, you'd feel fortunate. So surely if you have them, you'll feel fortunate. And you won't use them to conflict Torah. Because you understand that the Torah is the main thing in your life. But if not, then you won't be ashrecha b'olam hazeh. It'll be v'tov lach l'olam haba, but it won't be ashrecha b'olam hazeh. You're not going to be able to have those benefits in this world, because for you, those benefits may not be benefits. That's what it says. If you'll do all of that, then both ashrecha b'olam hazeh, because then the ashrecha will be tov lach l'olam haba. But if you couldn't live like that, then the ashrecha b'olam hazeh will not be good for you in the world to come. Then I'm not going to give you the ashrecha b'olam hazeh. That's what it means. So therefore, the Rambam gives that condition that you have to serve the Rabbanu Shalom b'simcha uvetuv leiva, which answers our second question too. There seems to be a contradiction between serving God b'simcha uvetuv leiva and putting in effort and toil. That's not simcha and tuv leiva. The answer is, simcha and tuv leiva does not mean fun. Okay, and we've spoken about this a few times here, so I'm not going to go into great detail. Torah is not necessarily fun. Okay, fun is thinking that the steaks and the bed and the champagne is the main thing in this world, and living it up in this world, that is what my purpose is, to have fun, to enjoy myself. It's not what we're talking about. It's not what you're here for. You can enjoy this world, can even have fun, but it's not the goal. That is not the purpose. And that's not the purpose of Torah either. Simcha and tuv levav means that I have a certain satisfaction, a certain feeling of accomplishment. I have a good heart, and I'm happy about what I'm doing. And therefore, it's worth putting in the effort. Because if it's something that really makes me happy and really is worth doing, that I feel good about, then things that make you happy and you feel good about don't necessarily come easy. You have to put effort into it. Fun is something that comes easy. You want to have fun. But if you want to enjoy the world the way it really has to be enjoyed, and put in effort now for the future, and realize that that's what really should make you happy and give you a good heart, then putting effort and putting toil is not a contradiction, just the opposite. What you put effort and toil is what you really appreciate. You appreciate what you do. So there's no contradiction between them. I always say that people in this world, the Goyish world, and Mamela, whatever affects the Goyish world affects the Jewish world. The generation, this generation, is basically a fun generation. They don't want to think too much. They don't want to put too much work in. They want immediate gratification, immediate results, without too much work, without too much. Everything has to be easy, even when it comes to Torah. Right? That's not that I have anything against Art Scroll. But that's it. You don't want to have to put and break your head over a Gemara. You want to be able to do it easy. And to the extreme where we make Gemara into computer games. Fun. It's fun games on a computer to what's it called, to learn Gemara. It's not something that you have to spend time on or whatever, or any learning for that matter. We want it to be easy, fast. That's it, fast and easy, and fun. The always like to mention that the Israeli orange growers have developed a new orange. It's supposed to be on the market already. They genetically engineered a new orange. And the new orange is going to have a very, very thin peel, not a thick peel, and no pits. Pitless orange. They were asked by the reporter who was reporting this new thing. They invested millions of dollars in genetically engineering this new orange. So the guy innocently asked, like, what was wrong with the old orange that you had to invest millions of dollars in a new orange? He said, people today want things fast and easy. And they want to be able to peel their oranges fast and eat it easily without pits, and we have to please our clientele. So it was worth investing millions to get an orange that's fast and easy. Now, when it comes to oranges, that may be fine. But when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs, that's not necessarily the measure of what is right and what's proper and what is beneficial. And people want, when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs, fast and easy. They don't want to put too much effort into it. They want everything to be fast and easy. And that's how we raise our children. And basically, we raise our children the way we think. And we make everything fun. We can't tell our kids, it's fun to do Torah. Right? Torah is fun. We make them mitzvah boys and mitzvah girls and Uncle Moshe. And I have nothing against Uncle Moshe either. Art Scroll and Uncle Moshe, very fine. But it depends when it becomes an extreme. I sit with my grandson sometimes in front of Uncle Moshe, and everything is so much fun. Oh, doing mitzvahs is fun, and this is fun. But that lasts till you're about 3, 4, maybe 5, maybe. And then one day, you say, Mommy, I want an ice cream cone. And Mommy says, but you just ate chicken. You can't have an ice cream cone for at least for an hour, maybe 6 hours. He says, wait a second. I thought Torah was fun. That is not fun. Fun, waiting an hour to eat my ice cream cone? You told me the Torah was fun. This is not fun. And I'll tell you something, a little secret. There are a lot of things in Torah that are a lot less fun than waiting an hour for an ice cream cone. Okay, take my word for it if you don't know. Okay? A lot of things in Torah that are a lot less fun. Okay? Torah is not fun. So what should we teach our children? That Torah is oppressive? No. Torah is worth it. It may not be fun and it may not be easy, but it's kedai. It's worth it. It's worth keeping the mitzvahs. The reward, the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate purpose of it all makes it all worth it. It's worth putting in the effort. That's what children have to know, because otherwise they don't want to work in school. They only want it if it's easy, because they don't see any purpose in working. If they can get the mark easily, fine. If not, then forget it. And that's what we have, a generation of kids that don't want to even be able to add. If you don't have a calculator, so then it's too hard. Everything has to be immediate, computer, calculator, on the spot, telephone. They don't even want to talk. They want to text people with half words. So they're not even, they don't know how to talk anymore. I don't know how to spell anymore. Marash Shiver of Gifter, I think in the 60s, he said that in certain colleges, they had reverted back to grunting. They want to talk, right? Went back to the jungles where people grunted because it was easier. So it's a world of total hedonism, of just immediate gratification in every area. And that kind of, nobody wants to put any effort into anything. They want the results right away, and that's why we live in a world where the results are slowly going away, because if you don't put effort and you don't put toil and do things that are not necessarily immediately gratifying, then nothing is accomplished. And the world is crumbling because of that. So Torah is not fun. And that's why also we live in a world where, forget about the children with Uncle Moshe, and forget about Art Scroll, and forget about, we live in a world where people don't want to do mitzvahs anymore. Learn Torah, that's too difficult. You know what they want? Sgulas. Sgulas. You want to have a, tell you right now, you want to, what's it called, used to be, when I was growing up in yeshivas or whatever, you want to be zolche on kippur to a good din, so you had to do tshuva. That wasn't easy, okay? You had to daven. You had to give tzedakah. Tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, right? Those are three things. And those are pretty hefty things to do. And it took 40 days of really working and elul, and those pretty hefty things. Today, you don't do any of that. You give a certain amount of money to a bunch of rabbonim. They will daven for you for 40 days by the kosel or something like that. And you're guaranteed to a shoe in to Olam Haba. You don't do anything. Go to sleep. Take your Sealy mattress. Sleep for the next 40 days. And they'll daven for you.
So why are the
rabbonim
doing it?
I'm not doing it. You can't blame me. I don't know which rabbanim. Wait a second. I agree. I feel the same way. 100%. 100%. Really. But, there's still a certain covet of chachamim that, if I don't understand what they're doing, Right, maybe they have a reason. Okay, they have a reason. I'm not, okay. I don't understand it. I don't agree with it, 100%. I'm not going to be part of it. Why an Adam Gadol permits him, first of all, I don't know, just because somebody shows me a picture of an Adam Gadol with a poster does not mean that they're part of it. Doesn't mean they're part of it. And it doesn't necessarily mean they agree with it. On the other hand, what are they supposed to do? Come out and say, don't give tzedakah? They put the thing up, right? So I don't know. I don't know what should do, who they should get to, and what the message is. But I do know that some of this is absurd. I heard on the radio back a few months ago that in the name of an Adam Gadol, and I'm sure he never said it. I'm sure. There's no shaila, because if he said it, he's an idiot. And he's not an idiot. He is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So he couldn't have said this. Okay. They were collecting money for a tzedakah, for a charity that took care of handicapped children. Handicapped and what's it called? Retarded children. Retarded and handicapped. Physically handicapped and mentally retarded. And supposedly, this person was quoted as saying, if you give money to this charity, he guarantees that you will never have a child that has any of those problems. Now that's pretty good, because God doesn't guarantee it. Okay? God doesn't guarantee it. I guarantee you that he didn't guarantee it either. They quoted, I guarantee it. No child. I don't have to ask him. I know there's no child. Only an idiot could have said something like that. And only a bigger idiot could believe it. There's no guarantees in this world, especially just because you gave some tzedakah to an organization. But that's what people want. They want guarantees. They don't want to work. They don't want to have anything that's yagia and maybe difficult and maybe uncomfortable. Everything has to be fun, easy, and if all you have to do is give money to this stock and you're guaranteed an easy life and you don't have to have any of these problems, and there's other things to do too, and it's not just giving money. It's other things too. Erev Shavuos, Chodesh Sivan, every year, they download Art Scroll in English, in case you don't know English, you can get it in Swahili too. What's it called? The Tefillah of the Shalach HaKadosh. Now, man gets a Shalach HaKadosh. He's a big gadol. And he composed the Tefillah to say, Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, that you should have children that are B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah. Beautiful Tefillah. I say the Tefillah. My wife says the Tefillah. See, I got you in there. My wife told me, you better not say that I'm here, and you better not say that I drove you here because you had a cataract operation yesterday. And so I didn't say any of that. But I got it. Okay. If you hear that I'm available next week, you'll know why. Okay, I couldn't resist that. I just want my wife to know that I don't necessarily do what she tells me to do. Where were we? Okay, yeah. So there, this tefillah of the Shalah, I say it. My wife says it. But anybody who thinks that they're going to have children that are B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah because they said a tefillah once a year on Erev Shavuos has to have their head examined. There's a lot more to it than saying the tefillah Erev Shavuos. You have to put in a lot of work, and after all of that, there's no guarantees. We're dealing with human beings. Not with machines. A machine, you may be able to guarantee what you get out. Avraham Avinu put a lot into Yishmael. He got a Yishmael. Yitzchak put a lot into an Esav. He got an Esav. So there's no guarantees. But it's a lot of work. It's not saying one tefillah. Okay, so I used to tell my kehillah, right, don't think that saying this tefillah is going to make your children B'nai Torah, B'nos Torah. It's the icing on the cake. Schoolers are the icing on the cake. First you have to have the cake. The cake has a lot of ingredients, takes a lot of time to bake, then you put the icing on. If you have a cake with icing on it, it's delicious. But if you don't have a cake, you just have a bunch of icing, it is disgusting. So now, this past 2 years, it was even worse. This past 2 years, people came up with the following idea. It's too hard to say that tefillah. It's a long tefillah. Got to say it. Even if you say it in English, it's long. So they said, if you'll send $18 to this place, they'll say the tefillah for you. That's for sure going to guarantee that your children are B'nai Torah. You can't even say the tefillah. Somebody else is saying it. It's absurd. But it's so absurd that there's thousands of people doing it and who think that this is what Yiddishkeit is all about. It's become a religion of, I don't know, voodoo. It's not Torah Nitzes anymore. Everything is schoolers. And there's no schoolers. It's absurd. A schooler, like I said, is the icing on the cake. You have to have the cake. So Torah is not necessarily fun. Torah is simcha, it's tuv leva, which comes from realizing it's worth putting in the effort and the toil, right? And it's a lifelong endeavor. If you understand that, then the Rabbanu Shlomo will make your life in this world easy, or sometimes not, because he knows that you'll do better off if you didn't have things that are good, because then maybe you'll decide that that's the main thing in your life. Only the Rabbanu Shlomo knows. But he'll give you what's best for you, what's conducive for you. But if you show him that Torah and mitzvahs are the ikkar of your simcha, he'll know that giving you good material things is not necessarily going to deflect you from that. But if you show him that those things are the main thing in your life, then why would he want to give you more of them and deflect you more from mitzvahs? He's hurting you. He's not helping you. The Rabbanu Shlomo is there to help you, not to hurt you. That's why the Rambam says that one of the conditions of getting these conducive conditions of material things, if you serve God, the simcha, the tuv leva. We'll get to the other thing next week.